Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Erin Morgan.
And I'm Stacey Sage.
And we work for the members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, we welcome Mark Ferguson to Flock Talk. Mark is the owner of NextGen Agri, a business operating mainly in Australia and New Zealand that supports producers' decision-making with independent advice and objective data. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Stacey. Thanks, Erin. Great to be here.
Hey, Mark, let's start off with a little background for our members who don't know you. Tell us about your background in sheep farming and how you got started at NextGen Agri.
So I kind of grew up, always been in sheep. I remember sort of driving around in the ute with my Uncle Joe from like probably my earliest memories of holding a bit of string to keep the door ute closed. It was a pretty special bit of vehicle. But so I grew up on a sheep farm, sheep and wheat farm in Australia, in Victoria, sort of a 300 mil rainfall, very dry, very different to Ontario sort of country, sand and heat, pretty much what it was. But always loved sheep, started breeding polled orsets or Angora goats when I was 10, polled orsets when I was 12, started a stud when I was 13 or something, and then went on to uni and have always worked in sheep research and then started NextGen Agri 7 or 8 years ago to sort of really specialise in genetics, which is my real passion.
Fantastic.
Okay, before we dive into our questions, as follow-up to your convention talk for sheep farmers just beginning to explore genetics, what should they know first in order to make genetic progress when selecting breeding stock?
Yeah, I guess when I'm starting out, I'd really want to focus on the fact that I think people start thinking that breeds are genetics, or that genetics is just about which breeds you choose, whereas the thing to know is there's massive variation within breed, and so this big opportunity to do whatever you like really with genetics but you won't get there if you keep thinking that all the Dorsets are the same or all Ritos are the same. You have to really understand the fact that there's massive variation and for everything that you see in your sheep. So it's not just in growth or just in how many lambs they have. There's everything you see in those animals has a genetic component pretty much. And obviously they all have an environmental component as well, but there is a proportion of what you see is genetic, and probably working out which bit is and which bit isn't is the key thing. So some traits like reproduction, really lowly heritable but big variation. Other traits like growth and stuff are quite heritable, so you'll shift them more quickly. So understanding that, sort of getting into the detail, but really just keeping your mind open and understanding there's big variation to exploit within genetics, and it's all the health traits, it's the growth traits, it's the production traits, it's everything you see in those sheep has a genetic component, and therefore you can manipulate and improve. And the other thing to remember, it's like compounding interest, that the gain you make this year is you can make gain on that gain next year. And so get started early, because the same as compounding interest, if you start saving money early, it grows to a bigger number and it's the same in genetic gain.
So it sounds like the key is record keeping, data, and more data.
Yeah, you'll get nowhere if you're just using your eyes and your hands. There's so much variation that us mere mortals can't see that variation, because we get blinded by the environment. We get blinded by how well we feed them or how well someone else feeds them. You go to a show ring and animals have been fed and prepared, and you really have no idea what the DNA is doing under all that, because you weren't there to see how those lambs were before they went under that preparation. But the data doesn't lie, and the more information we get and the better quality that information is, the better we go at tracing the profitability traits. And I think that's one of the things that I always quote is that breed a profitable sheep and learn to like what it looks like. And I know that people don't do that. There's always a bit of a human element, but it is really true that we don't know what money looks like in a sheep. We know, and so we have all these people that like to tell us about all these breed traits and stuff, but really, is that what's going to keep you having a barn and keep you having sheep, or is it the money that spins out of that system? And always it's the coin, and I think that's something to focus on as well. Make sure that whatever you are selecting on is linked to either cutting costs, improving your labor efficiency, or making you more money.
Amazing. So many of you will remember that Mark was at our sheep convention in Cambridge, where he was our keynote speaker. And Mark and I also traveled from Ottawa to Lake Huron together over a week, covering 2,000 kilometers, and we saw 15 different farms. So Mark has had a little bit of familiarization with our Ontario sheep farms. And now that you're back in New Zealand, Mark, have you had a chance to reflect on some of the positive aspects of Ontario sheep farms that sort of stood out over the trip?
Yeah, I guess firstly, just really want to thank you and all the people we visited for a fantastic trip. So it was a really great trip around and a great opportunity to see lots of different systems and lots of different people. I think definite positives were how well nutrition is controlled, obviously. I think Ontario sheep farmers can be proud of how well they sort of control what's going on with and really think hard about how to get cheap energy into those animals. So there was some really good efficient systems on the feeding aspects. I think like here, sheep farmers are awesome people. I think, yeah, it felt like at home from day one, really, with their people just with a very similar attitude to life, obviously hardworking people and doing great jobs. I think the big positive is probably just like the opportunities in cover crop grazing and solar panel grazing and the fact that while it is a small industry in Ontario, there is potential there for people willing to have a go. There's certainly great potential, and I guess probably the thing I'm envious of the most is the fact that you've got that massive population in Toronto that are keen to eat the stuff, and so like an industry has to be successful when you've got strong demand. And I think like that often you have industry startup that are trying to sort of produce a product and then convince people to use it, whereas it's the opposite in Ontario, where you've got a big demand and an opportunity to supply that demand. So that was great to see, and the prices you receive allow a high input system, which is awesome and very different to what I guess systems that we deploy because of price points and the fact that we can't control the weather. I know there's some outdoor sheep farmers, but the people that use indoors, you can at least control what's going on, which is very different to how I always farmed.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Since your visit, there have been some farmers who have reached out to your company directly to import ram genetics. Can you tell us what you have found in your early searches in the Lamb Plan database that you think will benefit Ontario?
Yeah, I think you don't want to be the wise person from overseas, but there is a lot of genetic potential that has been sort of captured in Australia and New Zealand, and particularly Australia, probably relevant for Ontario for reasons we'll get to. But I think what I did see is that anyone was grazing outdoors was getting smashed by worms, mainly because of the inability to use some of the treatments that we've got. But yeah, so there's genetics available in Australia and New Zealand that have really focused on animals that don't require drenching or require it less because they're naturally resistant to worms. I think in these systems, I think what Ontario has got is heaps of fecundity, so heaps of multiple births in their animals, but lamb growth is a big factor in the systems. And I think what we do know is that over the last 20 years of selection, Australian prime lamb ram breeders, whether that's Dorset or White Suffolk, have really just absolutely honed that trait, really drilled that up without increasing birth weight. So not getting into problems that you can do by driving growth. And I guess interestingly, they've done that while increasing carcass muscling. They've improved eating quality now in the last 5 years since they've really deployed a lot of genomic technology to get eating quality. So intramuscular fat and shear force are the two traits that they've been really successful at improving. So it's probably the depth of data that we've got in Lamb Plan that could definitely be deployed in Ontario. And there's genetics here that have below average birth weight, probably same birth weight as Ontario genetics, but would grow in excess of 5-6 kilos more at 200 days of age. Is what I'm thinking based on what I've seen, and some linkages that we sort of could find while we're over there. Found some animals that had been used in both Australia and Ontario, and so that gave us a pretty good link as to what the sort of seeing how they're performing in Ontario gives us a good idea what another 8 or 9 kilos of genetics would do in terms of growth. So yeah, I think there's plenty of opportunity to grab the hard work of other breeders, and I think that's always the game in genetics. You don't want to, like, there's no point being a hero and doing it yourself. If somebody's already done it, grab it and use it. Like, you don't see people hanging around Silicon Valley sort of reinventing the wheel. They're always inventing something new, and I think we have to think about that in genetics. You just grab other people's hard work, because there's no point doing the 20 or 30 years of hard graft if you don't have to.
Absolutely. So speaking of that, we know that we've started some conversations between our staff and our research committee and your company about some next steps. Can you tell us how you see NextGen Agri potentially supporting our sheep farmers in the future?
Yeah, I guess we're really keen to help where we can or where we can be useful. And I think the beauty of our business is that we only think about genetics. We don't have to think about all the other stuff that your sheep farmers have to think about. We don't have coyotes coming down to chew on anything. We just get to think about genetics all day long. So, yeah, I think helping people, I guess, get clear on their breeding objective, working out exactly what they want to achieve and then how they would go about which traits they would select on to achieve that objective, how they would collect data, how they would sort of, and then handling that data is something that we'd be keen to help with. I guess at an industry level, there's the opportunity to really, I guess, some of the things that I've said already around growth and stuff, we need to make sure that's true. So set up systems that we can compare Ontario genetics and potential imports or whatever and just see, make sure that there is that opportunity there. And I think around the health traits, I see, like, I'm really excited about the genetics of coccidia, for example. I think that's something that I haven't had to play with because it doesn't feature in our production system very often, but that was one of the things that you could see the whites of eyes of farmers pretty quickly if you mentioned coccidia. Because it does, people have seen what it can do to lamb growth and production and health. And I think that's something that really excites me. I always love getting my teeth into something new, some new trait that hasn't really had to be focused on before. And the whole reason I ended up in New Zealand was to play with sheep's feet, was to really to look for genetics of foot rot, which is what we've done and really successfully achieved sheep that now can, that don't suffer from that disease anywhere near as much as they did. And I think that's a big opportunity.
Okay. We have a closed flock of sheep at our Ponsonby Research Station and some ongoing parasite research happening on that site. Do you see some opportunities to incorporate our current research infrastructure into a genetics project selecting for coccidia resistance?
Yeah, and I sort of already declared my interest in coccidia, and I do think Ponsonby is a good spot to do that work. I think what you've got in Ponsonby is a dedicated people who are very used to collecting data, which is the key foundational block to any sort of research project is people that are very much know what that's about, because you can't afford to lose data when you're doing this sort of work. So yeah, I think the opportunity to, obviously Ponsonby's within the quarantined area, you couldn't do coccidia research, but it is split into that opportunity in the other area, which is where you could bring in purposefully challenge animals. You could breed particular animals, then purposefully challenge them for both for worms and coccidia. So and then sort of understand a bit about what's going on in those genetics, which would, so I'm pretty confident that you could design a protocol within that facility that then could be played out across the industry. So obviously you want to do that in a controlled scenario first, so you don't just have a heap of farmers sort of suffering coccidia problems and trying to under a loose protocol. You need to tighten up that protocol, but I think it could be sort of built in Ponsonby and then deployed more broadly where it can have a bigger impact out with individual farmers getting oocyte counts on their lambs and that sort of thing. But we would need to test that early before we sort of went broad scale. So I think there's a big opportunity there. I think what I've always found is if you progeny test for any trait, you'll find variation. So whether that's eyelash length or foot rot resistance, if you use a group of rams that are good for something else or have been put forward by industry or put forward elsewhere, there's always going to be variation in that trait, and coccidia will be the same. So just by chance, there'll be some animals that are great for their natural resistance to coccidia and others that aren't. And we know that obviously there's a few papers around, but also we know just in anecdotally, you look at animals, as they get older, they don't suffer from it and they build up their immunity to it. So all we're asking the animal genetically to do is to do that earlier in life. So it's something that you could easily think that will have a genetic component because it gets there eventually. So all we want them to do is actually build that immunity a few months earlier or several months earlier. And so, yeah, I think just understanding that a little bit further would be a great opportunity for the industry. And I think for the indoor sheep industry worldwide, that would be something that would be really powerful.
Amazing. So when we're talking about bringing in genetics from Australia and New Zealand, a question that comes up pretty often is that, you know, Australia and New Zealand are primarily pasture-based systems and Ontario has a lot of confinement flocks. So how does that work? How do the genetics from a pasture-based system perform in a confinement flock? Is there a way to know that ahead of time? Or are we just going to see major problems from bringing in genetics that are adapted for one system into an Ontario system that's completely different?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of things there, and it sort of gets back to the point of why I was talking about Australian genetics and less so New Zealand terminal genetics. I think they're superior in Australia, and B, Australia does have a very heavily grain focus within their lamb industry. So while Australia might be perceived as being grass-based, the New Zealand definitely is. Like, there's not much grain finishing here. But in Australia, a lot of lambs would come out of grain feedlots going into US market. Your Ontario market would be coming out of grain-fed market. So a lot of genetics are already being produced to drive production on concentrate on grain. Some of that is indoors. Most of that is in outdoor feedlots, but really you only do that indoors because the environment is horrendous, whereas in Australia it's like we don't have the winter, obviously, so that can be – but it's the same thing. They're being fed high concentrate diets and being selected to perform under those diets. So I don't think there's the difference that may be perceived to be there. I think everyone loves to claim genetics by environment interactions, which is the sort of scientific term for what we're talking about. That is where genetics would re-rank under different environments. But there's been, I don't know, 200 or 300 papers written on that stuff, and it's always sort of 1-3%, or very hard to. It's never as big as anyone thinks it is. All I think it is that we just haven't characterized those genetics properly. So yes, the Australian genetics aren't going to be good for coccidia resistance because they haven't been selected for that. So that might, or some of them will be, but it'll be random. It won't be every sheep you get will be good or bad for it, because it's probably going to be correlated with worm resistance, which is why I'm pretty focused on that trait, particularly for bringing genetics into Ontario, because we've seen some work already that the immune system, or selecting for worm resistance or natural resistance to nematodes, just builds the general immunity of animals. And so I think if we're careful, we can make sure we don't expose ourselves to that risk. But yeah, I don't think there's anywhere near the difference that people think there are. I think the focus early, at least, should be on the terminal breeds in Ontario. I don't think the maternal breeds are too far. I mean, there's probably no equivalent maternal breed here, because we just wouldn't want something as prolific as a reader. But I think the terminal genetics is where I'd focus early, because I think that's the big opportunity. And I think that's where probably one of the opportunities generally across Ontario is being much more deliberate with a maternal terminal system, rather than kind of just having a breed and producing lambs. It's kind of which of these animals is going to be kept as a maternal animal, and minimising how many of them are bred to maximise the number that are just going out as straight performance animals, the same as you would in a pig industry or any other intensive industry. I think it's a mind shift from just sort of putting an extensive system into a shed. It's got to be, this is an intensive system. We have to breed sheep particularly for this intensive system.
Fascinating. Yeah. Since Australia uses Lamplan for recording traits and Ontario uses Genovis, is it important to create a linkage between the two, and how do you see us doing that?
I think it's important for animals in Ontario to be linked to Lamplan just to know where you stand on the world stage in genetics. So and I think it would be great to compare how two rams rank in Genovis with how they rank in Lamplan, just to demonstrate to people really that these systems are the same. They're both using very similar maths. The benefit of Lamplan, I suppose, is it has millions of dollars worth of investment every year, or maybe not every year, but over time it's had tens of millions of dollars in investment in the genomic aspects of it, in the in the amount of traits that are recorded. So obviously, and this is not sort of down talking genomics at all. It's just the scale of the industry means there's a lot more investment in land plan. And so there's a few traits in genomics which people have used, and then there's, I don't know, 20 more traits in land plan plus more than that probably, and increasing all the time. And so that just gives us a much greater ability to really tailor that breeding objective to every individual flock. And I think I think it is important that we work out how those systems or how animals rank in those different systems to give people some surety that, but then I think there is an opportunity to potentially use land plan more widely across Ontario because it will have some traits that will take time to get into genomics. And I guess I'm not a massive fan of sort of double spending money. If it's already been done, there's no point redoing it somewhere else.
So yeah, thanks for that. It's interesting because we want to have the two. I think we've been talking about having the two systems at least see how compatible they are, so that we can make sure that they talk to each other, and I think that's important too when we're talking about maybe bringing in some genetics from Australia and looking at maybe some of the high performing breeds, like you've mentioned, White Suffolks being very popular in Australia and being introduced into New Zealand. For their superior genetic gains, and I'm interested to know whether White Suffolks would be, you know, whether there be an advantage to bringing them into Ontario, into our breeding programs.
Yeah, I think just back on that genomics question, like, I think it'll be great for commercial farmers to continue recording their data. You don't need complex systems for commercial farmers, but for the ram breeding sector, I think land plan would be. Will be superior, but so that's just a clarification there. But yeah, so I guess and White Suffolks is not necessarily just because of it's not the breed, it's the fact of what's happened, I suppose. There's 50 to 100, maybe more than that, breeders who have really focused on performance in White Suffolks over the last 20, 30 years. They took a Black Suffolk and a Poll Dorset and originally and cross those two and then that sort of and bred back to the Suffolk sort of breed type. But it's not so much the breed, it's the fact that the breeders of that breed are generally very focused on performance. And so have bred the kind of impossible, they've kept birth weight low, they've bred really high growth rate, they've chased those meat eating quality traits. They've also, some of them have chased for worm resistance, some of them have also chased the maternal traits. And so as a breed, and there are Poll Dorsets in Australia that kind of have matched that as well, but there's probably more just generally more greater numbers of White Suffolks. When I was growing up, Dorsets had all of the market share pretty much, but now White Suffolks have taken a lot of that in New Zealand, mainly around, mainly because of they were just a breed group that really got focused on performance. And I think that's what we've seen in Angus. That's what we've seen across a variety of different industries, that the breeds that really got down and really use this data to their absolute advantage have got ahead. And that's what we're seeing in the White Suffolk industry and White Suffolk breeders in Australia. And we've been introducing them to New Zealand for the last 3 or 4 years with a couple of breeders here and seeing great results, seeing like up to 10 kilo differences in weaning weight, like massive gains made by bringing these animals in. I'm not guaranteeing that'll happen every time, but that's the kind of scale. Like it's I don't believe in silver bullets, but it's kind of close to it. And I think, so that's why I'm interested or intrigued to see how they would perform in Ontario, because I do think there's a lot of upside, and it's just a good example of what happens if you really dedicate yourself to data and information for 30 plus years, you get a massive shift in performance.
How about crossing for shedding traits? We understand there is a movement to incorporating shedding genetics in Australia and in New Zealand.
Yeah, so big time. It's been kind of a 30-year overnight change. It sort of was bubbling away in the background for a long time with Dorpers. And then over the last 10, 15 years, there's been some breeders that have really dedicated to actually breeding like a breeds or putting together traits that are shedding breeds both maternally and more recently terminally, to yeah, to take the wool off just because of the work and cost associated with wool. And one thing that was very clear in Ontario, that wool isn't worth very much, and it's a bit of work to, and a bit of cost to have those shears come in an industry where obviously there's not infrastructure to really shear the same as we would have, and it's not the people around, so it is a pain. So I think there is definitely an opportunity there. So it's probably early days in the there's obviously lots of breeds that have been that are shedding for forever, but I guess the important thing is you can't obviously lose too much production. You take that cost of shearing out and that cost of the wool out, but you can't afford to lose too much performance in doing that. And that's the sort of what's happening in New Zealand at the moment. A lot of people are importing genetics and then making sure we're being careful with not sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's no point having no wool, but then having no production either. And so, but there are definitely breeders and people that are making gains. And I know some of the larger flock operators type people were pretty interested in this particular trait because it is a cost to them. If you and while it's nice to have that few day or day or whatever, where you get shears around, have a couple of beers with them, it's a cost to a business. And at whatever it was, 60 cents a pound or whatever you're getting for your wool, it's not really going to justify the cost. So I do think there's an opportunity there. I think probably important to go shedding rather than hair, and that's probably, you could discuss that, but I think obviously the winter that you experience is not even close to anything I've ever experienced, and so having wool that grows through the winter but then sheds off in the spring is kind of what I think would be ideal, and there are breeds that do that for sure. I think that's got some opportunity. It's not pretty farming. Obviously you've got animals that sort of dropping wool or whatever, but in reality, again, if we think about what the bank manager wants and not what we want to look at, I think there's some definitely potential there. I don't think there's any particular ram that you could go and grab off the shelf and say, here's a perfect shedding animal for Ontario. I think it would have to be built, but that's the same with everything you do, really. You need to tweak animals to suit the system. But I do think it moves pretty quickly. Like when we've had quite a few people transitioning, and you kind of do start seeing animals that shed off in the first generation of a cross, and then second generation you get quite a few that start shedding off. And even if you could got it down to only having to shear every 18 months or something because they shed off all the points and you don't have all the dags and standing in the mud or whatever, like you could, I guess your system isn't, if you could stretch shearing out to 18 months, it would be better than having to do it every 12 months or every 6 months or whatever. So, I think there's plenty of potential there. Or if they shed off most of the wool, then you only got to shear the bit off the back, then any operator could probably do that. So again, you don't need a specialized person to do that because all the tricky bits are all falling off anyway. And that happens really quickly. The undercarriage, the bare bums, the sort of bare bellies, the bare legs, the bare heads, that happens really quickly in a system. And then, so you've only really got the long blows left, and even me on a handpiece could probably get that off.
Awesome. Oh, thanks so much, Mark. As we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to leave, for producers to think about as they're considering, genetic improvements to their farm?
Yeah, I guess just stay curious, I suppose. I said it at the start, but I think we have this issue that we have commercial farmers farming and then we have people breeding or stud breeders breeding rams, and people think those two things are different things, or that you sort of got commercial farmers who just keep their own rams because they don't think the stud breeders are doing what they want, and the stud breeders who struggling to sell rams. I think really getting yourself focused on what you actually want to do, like doing that, getting a breeding objective, which is a fancy way of saying having a plan, which is, right, I want a sheep that has this many lambs and turns them off at this many days of age, and have some stretch targets in there. Like, look seriously what your system is and think about what perfect would look like. Like, if I didn't have to treat for coccidia, or if I had less losses or whatever. So having that clear objective as to what you are trying to do, and then think really long and hard about sort of the genetic traits that would underline that. And I'm happy to take an email from anyone to sort of help clarify that, and then finding breeders that you're aligned with that are doing those things. I think putting two sheep together isn't breeding. You need to actually think hard about, and most of your gain will come from the ram. So all of the ewe selection you do and all the things you do it within the barn or which animals you retain matters little if you just go and get the same old ram or the same type of ram every year, because they contribute a big chunk of the genetics, obviously. I guess the overall sort of theme there is be deliberate. Don't do anything just because that's how it's always been done or that's the easy way. I think like there is a significant opportunity in your industry where, like in our industry, genetics is important, but nutrition tends to be more important. Like if I could fix one thing on most farms, it'd be how animals are fed. Whereas in your intensive systems, you've sort of got that bit controlled and understood, and you've got great people helping you do that. So genetics is actually a big component of your future, a big component of the opportunity that's sitting, the sort of latent potential in the industry will be more genetics than nutrition. So don't underestimate the power of genetics. And I guess the last thing was, if you get the opportunity to do a progeny test, so just mate one sire with and another sire and try and get them as an animal that you might want to use and one that you have been using, just seeing those progeny and having a tag in the ears of those progeny, you can never unsee the power of genetic gain. And once you've done a little progeny test at home, you will be a different person when you approach genetics. So I think if everyone can run a progeny test and just look at the variation that causes, that will help them. But you have to measure stuff. You can't just look at them. You have to weigh some stuff and measure some things. But I think that's an important thing to go forward. But, yeah, no, it's been really great getting to know the Ontario sheep industry, and had a fantastic trip over there last year, and really look forward to doing whatever we can to help the industry prosper.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate it.
We really do. Thank you so much for joining us on Flock Talk today to share your insights on genetics.
All right. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
If you would like to learn more about Mark's business, NextGen Agri, you can find him online at nextgenagri.com or on Instagram at ferg_nextgen_agri. We will share his contact information in the show notes.
Hey, Stacy, what's new at Ontario Sheep Farmers?
Oh, I've got something fun to share. We are thrilled to unveil the new Ontario Sheep Farmers website designed to serve our members better than ever. The new platform is modern, user-friendly, and optimized for all devices, making it easier to access the resources and information you need. One of the key benefits of our upgraded website is the ability to deliver real-time updates with significantly fewer staff resources. This means you'll always have the access to the latest industry news, events, and resources faster and more efficiently, and at less cost to OSF. Experience the difference today and see how we're simplifying connections and enhancing support for Ontario's sheep farming community.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Flock Talk, please subscribe to your podcast app to receive alerts for our future episodes. And please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, at Ontario Sheep on X, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org.